join us in a world where you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Sit back as we discuss hard lessons from the best and brightest the personal defense and competition shooting industry has to offer. Let us help you help yourself, no matter where you are on your personal path. Ballistic Radio is brought to you by Centurion Arms, hard-use rifles and accessories at easy day prices. Visit them online at centurionarms.com. Now here's your host, John Johnson.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Centurion Arms, hard-use rifles and accessories at easy day prices. Visit them online at centurionarms.com. I'm your host, John Johnson. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, photos, videos, class announcements, other things at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Hey, Joe.
I can see my breath.
It's cold. I take notes on an iPad when I do the show because it makes it a little bit easier to do the show notes later on. And I try and make time marks for quotes that maybe I want to pull and stuff like that. And I'm losing manual dexterity in my fingers.
I got to check the heat in here.
Yeah, it's really, really cold. And I feel like I might need to turn in my man card for saying that because I'm very much like one of those dads. It's like, don't touch the thermostat. It's set at 68 for a reason.
Extra blanket.
Yeah, yeah. Put more clothes on. But I'm a little chilled currently. But hey, I am super excited because John Correa is back for another episode. So, John, how's it going?
Every day's a holiday, man. Life is grand. How are you today?
Other than cold, I am great. The caffeine is kicking in. I had my Trenta cold brew with a triple shot of espresso added into it.
You could smell the color 9.
Well, not that I have a chemical dependency on caffeine, but I probably do. The scary part is how little it affects me at a certain point because I'm not as in great of cardiovascular health as I was a year ago, but my caffeine habits have not changed. I think my resting heart rate right now is probably low to mid 60s. Year and a half ago, it was low 50s with that amount of caffeine. And I always kind of joke that I might have gotten down into the low 40s if I didn't have the caffeine habit that I have. I don't know.
I feel you.
Yeah.
But, it's cold where you are, so you enjoy that. I said, this is why I live in Phoenix. It's because it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood here. But get back to me in July.
Yeah, well, I will say I was out there not too long ago, and it was much colder than I was led to believe that it would be, sir. I
especially out there on some of those ranges, man, where you get that desert breeze blowing. It can get very chilly in December.
What was funny was I'm pretty used to cold weather, or at least I'm comfortable with it. But seeing the Phoenicians, the locals out in it, I thought they were dying. I'm like, hey, are you guys okay? They're like,
they were dying.
Yeah, it's in the high 40s. I'm like, I know, but it'll be fine. We'll get through this together. But for those that might have missed the last episode, or for whatever reason, or just have stumbled upon the show and might not know who you are or what you do, could you let them know?
Yeah, I talk while people get mugged on the internet. So my name is John Correa and I own Active Self Protection, which is a self-defense and firearms training company, based out of Phoenix, Arizona. But if you know me, the reason that I have some, palanca in the industry is because, on my big YouTube channel, people send me, real life attacks, real life defensive encounters caught on surveillance videos, armed robberies, carjackings, muggings, home invasions, stabbings. And I do after action reports on them that mostly focus on mindset and the things that really happen so that we're prepared for them mentally and emotionally. And then on my second channel, Active Self Protection Extra, we teach skill set. So I teach handgun skills, rifle skills, shotgun skills. We teach martial arts there, legal and moral self-defense, of all kinds. So do class reviews and those kinds of things. So mostly what the company is focused on today is the YouTube channels, though we do travel the country as well and teach a host of classes.
So what I would like to talk about on this show is something that I've heard a lot of instructors say ahead of time, hey, you need to, before you choose to carry a gun for self-defense, you need to know that you can use the gun. And I think that's incredibly good advice, right? But I haven't heard too many conversations about the, so remove the legal side of things, okay? The legal side of when self-defense is justified is relatively clear-cut. There are some occasional ambiguities, but like the information is out there and not, I mean, it's open to interpretation, but at least there's a very solid framework. What I'd like to talk about today is the ethical and moral side of harming another individual to save our own lives or the lives of someone else. And I'd also like to talk about the spiritual side of it, and I think that you are uniquely equipped to discuss that. So where would you like to start off inside of that conversation?
Well, let me tell you, your listeners, a little bit there. So my bona fides, when we want to talk about the moral and spiritual aspects of this, I spent 14 years as a vocational evangelical pastor. So I did not grow up in a religious home. But I became a Christian in 1998 when I was in the military, actually. And then when I got out of the military, I pursued a master's degree. I have a master's of divinity in biblical communication from Phoenix Seminary. Then I was a vocational pastor for 14 years and also taught at the undergraduate and graduate level in Bible and theology. So that's kind of my professional bailiwick is as an educator and a pastor. So now, I laid that down in 2018. At the beginning of 2018, February 1st, I took ASP as a solo endeavor rather than as my, you know, I stopped pastoring at that point. So I'm still a shepherd. I didn't leave the faith. I just quit a job. And that's integrated into my defensive message. So, yeah, I'm down with all of it. Where do you want to start?
Well, I guess to be very clear, I want to start off with a couple of just, and I think that you'll agree with these statements. If someone decides that they cannot harm another individual, even to save their own lives or the lives of others, they're not wrong. That's a very personal choice. And I will say that if that is who you are as a human being, one, that's okay. And two, there are still tons of things that you can do to protect yourself and be safer. And I often think that one of the messages that we get wrong inside of our industry is that the only way you can be better prepared to defend yourself is if you carry a gun and are willing to potentially kill someone else. And there are a certain group of people that if that is the message that we give them, they're essentially going to be like, well, I guess I'm going to die. And it's not,
right.
That's not the case in my experience. Would you agree?
Totally agree. I think that, of course, the carriage of a firearm in particular is a huge moral decision. And if you don't feel like you can use it, I always tell people, listen, having a firearm in your home or carrying a firearm on your person represents a non-zero risk to you and your loved ones. And how much risk it is depends upon whether you follow good safe handling and administrative practices so you can minimize it, but it's not a zero risk. And if that risk is not outweighed by the benefit, and the benefit you would have is if you had to use it on the worst day of your life to defend yourself, and if you wouldn't use it, well, then the benefit doesn't outweigh the risk, and I wouldn't recommend you have it because the risk-benefit analysis doesn't work in your favor.
Sure.
And that's a very personal decision. I think that I always tell folks that if you decide to carry a firearm, you recognize, number one, that any fight you're in has the potential to be a gunfight because you're bringing the gun to you or with you to the fight. And therefore, you have to think through that morally. Am I a good, sane, sober, moral person such that I'm not going to use this gun immorally? And if I can't guarantee that, also, you should not carry it. You should not have it. And that's a very personal calculus that everybody has to do. And I honor people who decide not to.
Right. And it doesn't...
And I think the other side...
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I also think there are plenty of places in the world, and you know, I teach people literally all over the world with the YouTube channels, and there are plenty of places in the world that it is legislatively impossible to carry a firearm, and to tell those people they have no ability to defend themselves because they can't have a particular tool on them, I think, number one, is wrong. Number two, I think is immoral because that takes away their agency and their ability to protect themselves in ways that are possible for them.
Right.
Now, do I think that they should have the right to carry firearms? Of course, I think the right of self-defense is a God-given right, and therefore they should. And I think that their legislatures are wrong to remove that from them. But reality is reality, and just because you can't carry a gun somewhere does not mean that you cannot protect yourself.
And I'd like to discuss that a little bit more, and I've actually got a couple of more, like, preparatory statements before we get into this, because I'm going to play devil's advocate ever so slightly in this just to drive the conversation forward, but I want to very clearly provide context for why I'm doing that beforehand so that no one can like cut little clips of this and be like, John Johnston said this. I'm like, no, John Johnston did not say this. but we got to go to break and then we'll get a little further into that. Right now we're talking with John Correa from Active Self-Protection. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Centurion Arms, hard-use rifles and accessories at Easy Day Prices. Visit them online at centurionarms.com. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scatterguns since 1977, a legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories, as well as the EDC X9 series of firearms, which offers discriminating shooters 1911 match-grade accuracy, superior ergonomics, and concealability, with modern service pistol capacity as well as reliability at www.wilsoncombat.com. So we're talking with John Correa from Active Self-Protection, kind of about the ethics and morality of violence for self-defense. And one of the other, like, very clear statements that I want to make for the record or whatever it is so that people just sort of know where I'm at on this. I'm never trying to kill anyone, and I'm never teaching someone else how to kill someone else. I am trying to stop people from causing great bodily harm or injury to me or a third party. And that's all I'm trying to do. But we also need to acknowledge that death is sometimes a very predictable outcome for some of the best practices on how to stop someone. And we could use the example of the Jack Wilson church shooting, where he needed to stop that attacker as quickly as possible, because the longer it went on, the body count for innocent people increases. And the way that he chose to do that was by making a, you know, cranial shot on the guy, 15 yards, an incredible shot, shot him in the head, and that individual died. He wasn't trying to kill him, and I wouldn't be telling someone, you need to kill this guy right now. He was trying to stop him, and death happened to be an unfortunate side effect of that, right? And
right. I mean,
go
that's
ahead.
That's a big deal.
Well,
no, I think you're 100% right. I mean, obviously, people are, killing good people in his church And that man needed to be stopped immediately. And the best and most reliable way to stop him was to shut the computer off.
So I guess how does that, when we're talking about all of these things and the ethics and morality of that, does that change the math a little bit or perhaps present a different point of view for people that might be struggling with these things, do you think? Or is that just rationalization? Like, what are, I guess go a little bit further into that if you don't mind.
Well, I mean, I think what you said earlier of, listen, my intent matters, is very much a good thing, because you have to live with you every day. And for the rest of your life, you have to say, wait a minute, did I live my values out here? Was this what I believed to be morally good? Now, of course, everyone's the hero in their own story, right? And even a psychopath is the hero in their own story, pretty much. But I think that when I say, listen, I have an intent here to protect, I have an intent here to defend boundaries, then what that allows, I think, is a clearer, cleaner conscience than that idea that says, I want to kill. I don't think that's a normal, healthy human endeavor to say, no, I want to kill somebody. In fact, we would say that that is disordered thinking. That is, from a psychological perspective, really unhealthy. And we would want to really address that. And so from a behavioral perspective, of course, so that kind of danger to others is not okay. So when we say, wait a minute, my intent is to teach people to stop threats, to defend their boundaries, to end someone's violent intent. Because I always tell people all the time, listen, I get it that the actions that I take here, if I have to shoot somebody, are highly likely to cause death or great bodily harm to them. But in my mind, as I train, as I prepare my soul for this worst day of my life, that's his responsibility, not mine. That is, his actions have put him in that particular scenario. And what I tell people all the time is, listen, if you stick your hand in a blender, what's going to happen if that blender is on? That blender is on and you stick your hand in the blender, you're going to get that hand back bloody and broken. You don't blame the blender for that. That is, it would be stupid to blame the blender. You're the one who stuck your hand in it and should have known the consequences of that. So you're responsible for your outcome there. In the same way, if somebody decides that they want to be an imminent threat of death or great bodily harm to others, then they should know the consequences of that. And that's on them, not on the person who enforces the boundary that we use words and not violence. So that I think, gives people a clearer moral framework to act.
Well, and there's a quote from Lynn Givens that I absolutely love, and it's, I don't carry a gun to impose my will on other people. I carry a gun to keep other people from imposing their will on me. And I'm paraphrasing that somewhat. I don't know that that's a direct quote, but it's pretty darn close. And I think that, well, I don't know if I think this, but I suspect that some people might think this, that when people are making the decision to carry a firearm, they are, and I guess some people have done this because we've seen it, and, you know, oftentimes these people end up in jail, which is where they belong. But the vast majority of people that are carrying a gun are not carrying that gun to do something to someone else or go and be the handicapped parking space police or the whatever to go out and look for encounters with other people where that gun might come into play. The vast, vast, vast majority of people are simply just going out and living their lives. Yeah.
Yeah. They want to be left alone, right? So they don't want somebody to impose their will on them, and therefore they carry a firearm in order to be able to defend that boundary. And that is morally and legally perfectly acceptable.
Right.
And in fact, I would argue a moral good. And you know, if you are looking for a fight, well, then that places you outside of the bounds of normal morality, in my opinion. And so you know, with that in mind, mindset matters.
Well, and I wonder, too, if when these conversations come up, there's a quote from Homer. So a guy that's been dead for several thousand years at this point, but it's essentially the blade itself incites to deeds of violence. So this has been an argument that certain people have had for quite some time, is that if you carry an implement that is capable of producing essentially death, then that makes you want to use it. And I would say that for the people that are actually adept in utilizing those sorts of things, they are the people that want to use it the least because they understand the consequences of it. And I wonder if when people are thinking about starting this journey and things like that, that is maybe a confusion that they have that might give them pause and is one of the reasons they would decide not to. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think you're 100% right there, you know, and of course, you know, we ask that question, am I capable of making life and death decisions? And is it a good thing for me? I'll give you good for instances here. You know, I have family members who are adults who, you know, are like, look, I get too far in my fields and I make bad decisions when I do that. And so I just don't think that having a firearm is a good thing for me to have. And I don't know that I would be a good person to have a firearm nearby. And my answer to that is perfectly acceptable, and I applaud you for making that decision yourself. And I think that not recognizing that, I think, you know, does this idea of everybody has to be exactly like me. I don't think that's good. I think what we recognize is I really like the fact that I want to, you know, let people make their best decisions for them. And freedom for me means freedom for thee. And so if that best decision for you is to not go down that path and not be a self-defender, I'm okay with that. I'm totally fine. And from a religious perspective in my world, you know, there are Christians who are pacifists, and that's not my approach to life. And because I don't think that it's number one required. Number two, I don't think that it's the best approach. But I recognize that for some, that is a theological conviction and a spiritual conviction that they have. And I think that that's honorable to let them practice it.
Sure. And ultimately, you know, what we're doing, at least what I'm doing, and I think it's what you're doing too, is, like you said, teaching people how to enforce their personal boundaries and their right to exist the way that they choose to exist. And, you know, that extends to intellectual boundaries as well, which is not, you know, I know that's not popular in today's environment with how the country seems to be going, is that respecting other people's ideas is falling out of vogue, it seems. But inside of that is allowing people the space, allowing our students the space to say, hey, this isn't for me, but I still want to be able to protect myself. And I don't know. We're kind of getting a little focused in on that, but I think it's something that more instructors should maybe spend a little bit more time thinking about, is respecting that sort of thing. We have to go to break, and then when we get back, I'd like to delve into the theological side just a little bit. So right now we're talking with John Correa from Active Self-Protection. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Centurion Arms, hard-use rifles and accessories at easy day prices. Visit them online at centurionarms.com. This segment brought to you by BigTexOutdoors.com. BigTexOutdoors.com is the best place for you to find all of your everyday carry needs at the absolute best prices. Maybe you need all the Candela from ModLight at the lowest price? No problem. Spend too much time alone in your room and now you need an optic on your pistol? Well, BigTexOutdoors.com has those and they don't judge. Glock accessories? Yes. Fast, cheap shipping, 100% hassle-free returns, all that and more. And best of all, BigTexOutdoors.com has Ike. He's a good man and thorough. I like Ike. Everybody likes Ike, and you'll like Ike too. Visit BigTexOutdoors.com today and find out what happens when every customer is a friend, not just an order. So we're talking with John Correa from Active Self Protection about the ethics and morality of violence. And I want to be very respectful of the next thing that we're going to talk about, and I'll give some caveats, right? So I'm not a person of faith. I think of myself as a spiritual person, but as far as I do not fit into any of the, I guess, structured religious molds that currently exist. At least I don't right now at this point in my life. Maybe I will. I have in the past. Who knows what will happen? But I want to give that caveat. I do want to say this, though, too, is that, and you know this from personal experience, that does not mean that I don't respect people that are. So, and the reason why I'm spending so much time on this is if anyone listening, if I say anything out of ignorance that is offensive, please know that it's not intentional at all. So I guess my question for you, John, is that one of the things that, you know, is brought up by specifically Christians that I've talked to that are of the are pacifists, essentially, is thou shalt not kill in the Ten Commandments. And I've spoken with people that when we're having the conversation about utilizing a firearm for self-defense, that is one of the things that they bring up as one of the reasons why they don't want to select a firearm. And I, again, I try very hard to respect that, and I try and allow them other options that fit into the framework of what they're willing to do, not willing to do. Can you address that a little bit, though, from a theological perspective as far as the math that has gotten you to the place where you're willing to carry a firearm for self-defense as a religious individual?
Sure. Okay, so a couple things. For your listeners, both who are people of faith and who aren't, I think one of the things that we get into a problem with is thinking that the Christian faith and the practice of following Jesus is monolithic.
Right.
So if you're a Christian, that means these particular things, but it's very not. It's very much a textured and nuanced understanding from lots of different perspectives. So there are three major branches of Christendom and of Christianity: the Roman Catholic branch, the Eastern Orthodox branch, and the Protestant branch. And I am a part of the Protestant branch. And then within the Protestant branch, there are enough branches to beat everybody with a stick. And so which one you end up in there is, if you approach that, kind of really, you know, color this idea. And of course, if somebody was going to want to look for the teaching of Christian pacifism, kind of the seminal guy who is really important in American theology, here's a guy named John Howard Yoder, who in his book, I think it was in 72, he authored a book called The Politics of Jesus that he argued for Christian pacifism. And that gets found a lot in denominations like the Mennonites. And all of the Mennonite denominations, and some within some of the assemblies and classic Pentecostalism. Now, there's a lot on the other side as well. So here's the thing. When somebody says, okay, wait a minute, John, well, you know, the Bible says, is that the Bible and proof texting, so grabbing a verse and saying, well, this is what it says here, and therefore, this is, you know, how you live that way, is what we call proof texting. Aha, I have a proof text for what my belief is. And that's generally taking somebody's idea and baptizing it with the writing of a religious expert. I don't think that's a good way to live. Now, of course, I want to look at all of the Bible personally. My belief is that the Bible is inerrant and inspired. So inspired by God and given by him for direction for life and eternity. And therefore, perfect in everything that it says. Now, that's not everybody by a long shot, but it is me. So I want to understand it well and understand it in all of its context. So those are my caveats. Now then, when we get to what you're talking about in the Ten Commandments, and somebody says, wait a minute, this is a foundational statement of how the people of God should live. It's found in Exodus 20 is the kind of place where most people would go to. That it says, aha, it says you shall not kill. because they read it in a very particular translation in English of the Bible, most notably the King James Version of the Bible. King James Version is still the most popular version in America of the Bible, mostly because its copyright has lapsed, and so anybody can print it. I joke, it's like a 1911. Anybody can build one, right? You don't have to pay anybody a royalty. So with that in mind, that is probably not a bad translation for 1611, but in 2021, maybe not so much. So that word there, translated in the King James as kill, refers to the unauthorized taking of human life, to what today we would call murder. So words change meaning over time. And so the unauthorized taking of life we would call murder, and probably in all of the modern translations of Scripture there, it says you shall not murder. And of course, context says what is being said immediately around there. And in that same context of instruction, you have, for instance, in Exodus chapter 22, an instruction that says, wait a minute, if a thief is struck as he's breaking in, so if a thief breaks into your home and he is struck so that he's killed in the act, there's no blood guiltiness for him. However, if the sun shines on him, if he gets away and then the sun rises on him and then he is killed in retribution, then there's blood guilt for him. So even in that same exact context, what we see is there's a difference between taking a human life in defense of life and doing so as retribution. So when my friends who are pacifists, who I let live out their pacifism, if that's the way that you want to live, I don't think that's any harm to anyone else. It doesn't infringe on anybody else's rights. And so that's completely your right, and I honor it. Then go ahead. But I don't think that it's required. I don't think that Jesus was a pacifist or is a pacifist. I think there's a couple places that we see that pretty clearly. I think in John chapter 2, you know, it's very famous, the cleansing of the temple. Clearly, Jesus used the threat of violence to kick people out of his house. And that, you know, he made a whip of cords and then drove them out. And he wasn't like, here, look, I have this neat thing. Would you like to look at my whip? No, he's like, no, you're going to move right now, or there's going to be violence done upon you. And that boundary was set. They took him seriously and left. So I think that when you say, well, you shall not kill is a thing. Well, no, I think it's a little nuanced than that. There are times that God allows killing in Scripture, and I think there are even times he commands it. And not for individuals there, but as a society. And so when we see those all put together, I think we have to take a little more nuance than you can never cause great bodily harm or death and be right in the eyes of God. So now that's going to be determined by how you interpret and apply the writings of the Bible. And I take it pretty seriously, and that's my understanding.
Sure. And to be very – so, you know – I've been doing this for 8 or 9 years now, something like that. And this is probably the very first time in all of that time that religion has ever come up. It's one of those topics where I try very hard to stay away from it and also be respectful of it, right? Because, again, it's not an area that I feel exceedingly knowledgeable on, and I don't, like I said, I don't want to offend anyone out of ignorance. And so I've listened to what you've just said, and I'm going to ask a question, and I am asking that from a devil's advocate perspective. This is not my opinion. It's, and again, I apologize for all the disclaimers ahead of time, but I want to tread very lightly here so that people understand what I'm doing. What would you say to someone that was like, well, that's all well and good, Mr. Correa, but, you know, isn't that just a rationalization, or do you think it's pretty clear cut?
Well, I think that there's always going to be some in areas like this. This is not an area of the core of Christian doctrine, all right? So this is not an area that has such broad agreement that it's part of the historic Orthodox faith. So I wouldn't say, okay, wait a minute, if you don't understand it this way, then clearly you have no concept of, of walking with Jesus. That, to me, would be the height of arrogance. I do think that depending on Again, your view of the Bible and your understanding of how to interpret it, if you come anywhere close to kind of the way that I do that as a follower of Jesus, then you're going to at least allow some form of self-defense. Probably, again, because the way that you then approach it is in its historical and cultural contexts. So understanding that, you know, every letter in the Bible, it's a collection of letters, it's not a monolithic book. And each one of those letters has a context of its author and its audience and what the original author intended to convey to their original audience. And when you put all those together, you could say, wait a minute, is this just some form of sophistry to get to the place you want to go? It certainly can be, and we have to always recognize that. But I think if we take as our goal here to understand the original author's intent to their original audience, then understand how my context is similar and different to that original audience, and therefore take the appropriate principle and apply it to my life, then I think where we get in this topic is what I'd like to think where I end up, which is that we should take life very seriously and value it above all things, and that includes our own, and that allows us self-defense, even up to lethal force in limited instances.
Right. So we got to go to break. We'll talk about this a little bit more when we get back. Right now, we are talking with John Crea from Active Self-Protection. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Centurion Arms. Hard-use rifles and accessories at easy day prices. Visit them online at centurionarms.com. This segment also brought to you by Centurion Arms. Even if you're just a cook, a lowly cook, you call in tactical nukes from your couch every night with ease, you need to know that your life-saving equipment is going to work, and Centurion Arms knows it too. Veteran-owned and operated, Centurion Arms is dedicated to producing firearms, parts, and accessories with an outstanding level of quality, functionality, and precision at prices you can afford. Whether you just need a new rail or barrel or something else to finish off your latest build, or maybe you want to take all the guesswork out and buy a complete rifle, Centurion Arms has got what you need and knows that when you need it to work. Visit CenturionArms.com today to check out all their awesome products. Centurion Arms, hard-use rifles and accessories at easy day prices. So we're talking with John Crea from Active Self-Protection about the ethics and morality and theology of utilizing violence to defend our own lives. And we're kind of into the last segment, and we sort of discussed the theological perspective, at least from Christendom's point of view, or at least your interpretation of it. And I guess what I'd sort of like to shift back to is, you know, what do we say to good, decent people to get them to understand that while all life is valuable and we need to respect it and care for it and protect it, that in certain situations, if it really comes down to it, our life is more valuable than the life of someone who is willing to take ours from us when we are just living, like, going about our day to day. It's kind of an ugly way to put it that way, because, like, everyone's got value, some more than others, but, like, everyone at least is born inherently valuable. Like, what, how do we talk about this with people?
Well, I would say, John, I would push back just a little bit about your statement that said my life is more valuable than theirs. No, I disagree with that. I think all sure. human life is of inestimable value, worth, and dignity. But I do think that my primary responsibility and first responsibility is to protect and to have healthy boundaries and not allow my life to be taken, because it's the first and biggest gift that God ever gave me. And if somebody is a deadly threat to me and mine, that is their first responsibility, is to, with healthy boundaries, protect the life that God gave them. And by their actions of harming another and being a threat of death or great bodily harm to that other person, they have wantonly and recklessly endangered their own life, whether or not they know that, whether or not they accept that, they have, because I have the right to protect myself as God has given me. So when I say, wait a minute, whose life is more important, theirs or mine? Neither. They're both of inestimable value, worth, and dignity. We both have a responsibility before God to safeguard the life that he has given us as the first gift he ever gave us, and his image. They are the ones who have denigrated that. They are the ones who have put their own life at that risk, and therefore they are the ones who are responsible for their outcomes. So I don't think that my life is more valuable than theirs, but I do think it's just as valuable, and I do think that I have a responsibility and they have a responsibility, and I do not feel morally, spiritually, ethically obligated to own their responsibility. Instead, I will own my responsibility, and we each have that sphere to deal with. So if I have to use deadly force in order to stop them from wantonly disregarding their responsibility, that is their ethical quandary, not mine.
Well, and I think that my use of that specific language is very indicative of my worldview and probably my lack of faith in any particular spiritual being, right? In that, again, and I'm, you know, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm explaining like my language inside of that.
Sure. Well, and within the Christian paradigm there, John, what we would have is there is a difference between someone's intrinsic worth and their instrumental worth. And I would never say that old people have an equal instrumental worth. In other words, they are of equal value in what they do. No, absolutely not. But they're, in my opinion and in my worldview, their intrinsic worth so overshadows their instrumental worth that we don't look at instrumental worth in terms of their right to live. We look at instead inherent worth for that. And so we're delving a little deep in a philosophical world of value systems there.
Yeah, well, and I think that from my perspective, the way I'm framing it inside of my own mind is priority of life, right? And this is a concept that you can find inside of law enforcement or military. But if we're, you know, creating a hypothetical situation that is now a deadly force encounter, what is my priority of life? And I think that my use of the word value was clumsy language. Priority is a better word, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my priority of life inside of like a deadly force encounter, and this is my own personal math and where other people fall on that, I might have an opinion, but I can't make decisions for other people. I would never try to, at least not at this point in my life, right? But my specific priority of life is going to be, you know, depending on who's there, if I have family member there, family members there, or people that I consider family or a part of my family, they're going to be top of the list. So one of my kids, my partner, one of my brothers or sisters that we might not be related by blood, but they're closer to family than the people that I am related by blood with. They're going to be the top of the list, right? And then the next people down on that are going to be bystanders, the public, anyone who is maybe not directly involved inside of this, but I'm not going to allow my actions to harm those people, because that is unacceptable to me. I am not going to be the cause of someone else, you know, who is uninvolved in this situation and is just going about their day to day. I'm not going to hurt them or do anything that does hurt them, because that is important to me, right? Then next down on the list is going to be me. So like I've checked off the two boxes ahead on the priority of life, as far as direct family, people that count as such, public bystanders. All right, now here I am inside of this. I'm pretty important. I don't want anything to happen to me. And then last on the list is going to be the attacker, the person that has started this conflict, because presumably I didn't go looking for it, because that's not something that I would do, right? And
right.
You are correct, and I appreciate you for pointing it out. Value was not the word that I should have used there. Priority, I think, defines it pretty clearly. And that's my own
personal... Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. And that's my own personal math there. But everyone else needs to do their own math. And at a certain point, I guess the where we get into... where the conversation gets interesting and we're not going to have enough time to really examine it further is, I guess what I would challenge people to consider in all of this is, why on earth would you prioritize someone who started this incident above any of those three other things, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And I think, you know, you could call that the doctrine of competing harms. Again, priorities of life, priorities of action, and ethical circles of responsibility. And I can totally agree with you on all of those, Sean.
What would you say? I mean, and again, if someone does decide that, I respect their decision. I genuinely do. But I would, I guess, have people think about it a little bit further.
I think most of us don't think deeply in this area. We just assume. So most people's worldview is not a challenged or an actual thought out. Most people's worldview is filled with unthought knowns, things we know that we never have really kind of considered. And I think a more nuanced worldview is one which we really do consider, that we kind of take the frame that we hang on the world off and go, is this a good frame? Is this frame correct? Do I think that this is the best frame? And I think as we do that, that's a really philosophical discussion, a really kind of ethics-minded thing. I've taught ethics at the college level. So I think doing that is very wise, and looking at our worldview, very wise. Very few people do it. I remember I went and taught a group of PhD students in journalism and asked them about their worldview, and they just had never considered it. And I started flipping tables because I'm like, well, you know, what are you doing? You guys are setting the thought paradigms for the free world, and how dare you?
Right.
But us doing that as self-defenders is really valuable.
Right. And, you know, ultimately the entire point of this, the entire point of this is just to, I guess, prompt some conversation and some internal dialogue with yourself and how you're interacting with your students, and maybe even how you're framing all of this. We are at the end of the show. John, I really appreciate you taking time to do this today. If people want to find you on the interwebs, where can they do that at?
Well, the place that we will always be is activeselfprotection.com. And if you want to find us there, you can. You can contact us through our website. You can also find us on the old social media networks, YouTube. Just look up Active Self Protection. There's two channels there, Facebook, Instagram, all that stuff as well. We do monitor our inboxes and those things, and we'd love to hear from you.
Perfect. John, thanks so much for taking the time. Really interesting conversation, and I always enjoy talking with you.
Thanks for having me on, man.
Yeah, no worries. Hope the family's good. Please give them my best, and I will talk to you soon.
Same to you, my friend.
All right. Hey, make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio, and keep leaving those 5-star review on iTunes if you think we've earned it. Really helps us out. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next week.